Hello, angels. It is me, Willow, and we are back with the eighth. I'm going to say eighth with confidence. Who knows? Probably the eighth. Reading of Lois Lowry's The Giver. We're starting on chapter 15. If you haven't heard the previous recordings, I suggest that you do so. They are pinned in the media channel of my Discord server. They are linked on my Reddit profile in the pinned Safe for Work audio index. I honestly think it's up to date. I'm pretty sure I updated it, even with the last one, which normally I don't do. Normally I wait. And it's also on my Twitter, if you can scroll through all of my nonsense. Should not be too hard to find. I strongly suggest Reddit. It's probably the best way, unless you're a member of my Discord server. In which case, that's probably the easiest way. Okay, once you have read or listened to all of those, I suggest you come back and start here, because this is a great book, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly, and I need to get the other ones, because I'm going to be sad when this one is done. We're probably only doing two chapters, because that is how the pattern has gone so far. I am comfy in bed, I have my glasses on, I just ate something, I have something to drink. No candle today, but it hasn't been on in a couple days. I should light it. The room smells like flowers, though, so I don't want to overdo it. Anyway, without further ado, we are at chapter 15 of Lois Lowry's The Giver. Jonas entered the annex room and realized immediately that it was a day that he would be sent away. The giver was rigid in his chair, his face in his hands. "I'll come back tomorrow, sir," he said quickly, and then he hesitated. "Unless maybe there's something I can do to help?" The giver looked up at him, his face contorted with suffering. "Please," he gasped, "take some of the pain." Jonas helped him to his chair at the side of the bed. Then he quickly removed his tunic and laid down. "Put your hands on me," he directed, aware that in such anguish the giver might need reminding. The hands came, and then the pain came with them and through them. Jonas braced himself and entered the memory which was torturing the giver. He was in a confused, noisy, foul-smelling place. It was daylight, early morning, and the air was thick with smoke that hung, yellow and brown, above the ground. Around him, everywhere, far across the expanse of what seemed to be a field, lay groaning men. A wild-eyed horse, its bridle torn and dangling, trotted frantically through the mounds of men, tossing its head, whinnying in panic. It stumbled, finally, then fell, and did not rise. Jonas heard a voice next to him. "Water," the voice said in a parched, croaking whisper. He turned his head towards the voice and looked into the half-closed eyes of a boy who seemed not much older than himself. Dirt streaked the boy's face and his matted blonde hair. He lay sprawled, his gray uniform glistening with wet, fresh blood. The colors of carnage were grotesquely bright, the crimson wetness on the rough and dusty fabric, the ripped shreds of grass startlingly green, and the boy's yellow hair. The boy stared at him. "Water," he begged again. When he spoke, a new spurt of blood drenched the coarse cloth across his chest and sleeve. One of Jonas's arms was immobilized with pain. He could see through his own torn sleeve something that looked like ragged flesh and splintery bone. He tried his remaining arm and felt it move. Slowly he reached to his side, felt the metal container there, and removed its cap, stopping the small motion of his hand now and then to wait for the surging pain to ease. Finally, when the container was open, he extended his arm slowly across the blood-soaked earth, inch by inch, and held it to the lips of the boy. Water trickled into the imploring mouth and down the grimy chin. The boy sighed. His head fell back, his lower jaw dropping as if he had been surprised by something. A dull blankness slid across his eyes. He was silent. But the noise continued all around. The cries of wounded men, the cries begging for water or for mother and for death. Horses lying on the ground shrieked, raised their heads and stabbed randomly towards the sky with their hooves. From the distance, Jonas could hear the thud of cannons. Overwhelmed by pain, he lay there in the fearsome stench for hours, listening to the men and animals die, and learned what warfare meant. Finally, when he knew that he could bear it no longer and would welcome death itself, he opened his eyes and was once again in the bed. The giver looked away as if he could not bear to see what he had done to Jonas. "Forgive me," he said. Oh, okay, that was all of chapter 15, so maybe we're reading 3 chapters today? That was very quick. Let's see how long 16 is. Chapter 16. Jonas did not want to go back. He didn't want the memories, he didn't want the honor, and he didn't want the wisdom, didn't want the pain. He wanted his childhood again, his scraped knees and ball games. He sat in his dwelling alone, watching through the window, seeing children at play, citizens bicycling home from uneventful days at work, ordinary lives free of anguish because he had been selected, as others before him had, to bear their burden. But the choice was not his. He returned each day to the annex room. The giver was gentle with him for many days following the terrible shared memory of war. "There's so many good memories," the giver reminded Jonas. And it was true. By now, Jonas had experienced countless bits of happiness, things he had never known before. He had seen a birthday party, with one child singled out and celebrated on his day, so now he understood the joy of being an individual, special and unique and proud. He had visited museums and seen paintings filled with all the colors he could now recognize and name. In one ecstatic memory, he had ridden a gleaming brown horse across a field that smelled of damp grass, and had dismounted beside a small stream from which both he and the horse drank cold, clear water. Now he understood about animals, and in the moment that the horse turned away from the stream and nudged Jonas's shoulder affectionately with his head, he perceived the bond between animal and human. He had walked through the woods and sat at night beside a campfire. Although he had through the memories learned about pain and loss of loneliness, he too gained an understanding of solitude and its joy. "What is your favorite?" Jonas asked the giver. "You don't have to give it away yet," he added quickly. "Just tell me about it so I can look forward to it, because I'll have to receive it when your job is done." The giver smiled. "Lie down," he said. "I'm happy to give it to you." Jonas felt joy as soon as the memory began. Sometimes it took a while for him to get his bearings, to find his place. But this time he fit right in and felt the happiness that pervaded the memory. He was in a room filled with people, and it was warm, with firelight glowing on a hearth. He could see through a window that outside it was night and snowing. There were colored lights, red and green and yellow, twinkling from a tree which was oddly inside the room. On a table, lighted candles stood in a polished golden holder and cast a soft, flickering glow. He could smell things cooking and heard soft laughter. A golden-haired dog lay sleeping on the floor. On the floor, there were packages wrapped in a brightly colored paper and tied with gleaming ribbons. As Jonas watched, a small child began to pick up the packages and pass them around the room, to other children, to adults who were obviously parents, and an older, quiet couple, man and woman, who sat smiling together on a couch. While Jonas watched, the people began, one by one, to untie the ribbons in the packages, to unwrap the bright papers, open the boxes and reveal toys and clothing and books. There were cries of delight. They hugged one another. The small child went and sat on the lap of the old woman, and she rocked him and rubbed her cheek against his. Jonas opened his eyes and lay confidently, contently on the bed, still luxuriating in the warm, comforting memory. It had all been there, all the things he had learned to treasure. "What did you perceive?" the giver asked. "Warmth," Jonas replied. "And happiness. And let me think. Family. That it was a celebration of some sort? A holiday? And something else, I couldn't quite get the word for it." "It will come to you." "Who were the old people? Why were they there?" It had puzzled Jonas, seeing them in the room. The old of the community did not ever leave their special place, the house of old, where they were so well cared for and respected. They were grandparents. Grandparents? Grandparents. It meant parents of the parents long ago. "Back and back and back?" Jonas began to laugh. "So actually there could be parents of the parents of the parents of the parents?" The giver laughed too. "That's right. It's a little like looking at yourself in the mirror, and then looking at yourself in the mirror." Jonas frowned. "But my parents must have had parents. I never thought about it before. Who are my parents of the parents? Where are they?" "You could go look in the Hall of Open Records, so you'd find the names. But think, son, if you apply for children, then who will be their parents of parents? Who will be their grandparents?" "My mother and father, of course." "And where will they be?" Jonas thought. "Oh," he said slowly. When I finish my training and become a full adult, I'll be given my own dwelling. And then when Lily does, a few years later, she'll get her own dwelling. And maybe a spouse and children if she applies for them. And then mother and father. That's right. As long as they're still working and contributing to the community, they'll go and live with the other childless adults. And they won't be part of my life anymore. After that, when the time comes, they'll go to the house of old, Jonas went on. He was thinking aloud. And they'll be well cared for and respected, and when they're released, there will be a celebration. Which you won't attend, the giver pointed out. No, of course not, because I won't even know about it. By then, I'll be so busy with my own life, and Lily will be too. So our children, if we have them, won't know their parents of parents either. It seems to work out pretty well that way, doesn't it? The way we do it in our community? Jonas asked. I just didn't realize there was any other way until I received that memory. It works, the giver agreed. Jonas hesitated. I certainly liked that memory, though. I can see why it's your favorite. I couldn't quite get a word for the whole feeling of it, the feeling that was so strong in the room. Love, the giver told him. Jonas repeated it. Love. It was a word and a concept new to him. They were both silent for a minute. Then Jonas said, Giver? Yes. I feel very foolish for saying this. Very, very foolish. No need. Nothing in here is foolish. Trust the memories and how they make you feel. Well, Jonas said, looking at the floor, I know you don't have the memory anymore because you gave it to me, so maybe you won't understand this. I will. I'm left with a vague wisp of that one. And I have many other memories of families and holidays and happiness, of love. Jonas blurted out what he was feeling. I was thinking that, well, I can see it wasn't a very practical way to live, with the old right there in the same place. Maybe they wouldn't be well taken care of, like they are now, and that we have a better arranged way of doing things. But anyway, I was thinking, I mean feeling, actually, that it was kind of nice then, and that I wish we could be that way, and you could be my grandparent. The family and the memory seemed a little more, he faltered, not able to find the word he wanted. A little more complete, the giver suggested. Jonas nodded. I liked the feeling of love, he confessed. He glanced nervously at the speaker of the wall, reassuring himself that no one was listening. I wish we still had that, he whispered. Of course, he added quickly, I understand that it wouldn't work very well, and that it's much better to be organized the way we are now. I can see that it was a dangerous way to live. What do you mean? Jonas hesitated. He wasn't certain, really, what he had meant. He could feel that there was a risk involved, though. He wasn't sure how. Well, he said, finally grasping for an explanation. They had a fire right in that room. There was a fire burning in the fireplace, and there were candles on the table, and I can certainly see why those things were outlawed. Still, he said slowly, almost to himself, I did like the light they made, and the warmth. Father, Mother, Jonas asked tentatively after the evening meal, I have a question I want to ask you. What is it, Jonas? His father asked. He made himself say the words, though he felt flushed with embarrassment. He had rehearsed it in his mind on his way home from the annex. Do you love me? There was an awkward silence for a moment, and then Father gave a little chuckle. Jonas, you of all people, precision of language, please. What do you mean? Jonas asked. Amusement was not at all what he anticipated. Your father means that you used a very generalized word. So meaningless that it's become almost obsolete, his mother explained carefully. Jonas stared at them. Meaningless? He had never felt anything as meaningful as the memory. And of course our community can't function smoothly if people don't use correct language. You could ask, do you enjoy me? The answer is yes, his mother said. Or, his father suggested, do you take pride in my accomplishments? And the answer is wholeheartedly yes. Do you understand why it's inappropriate to use a word like love? Mother asked. Jonas nodded. Yes, thank you. I do, he repeated slowly. It was his first lie to his parents. Gabriel, Jonas whispered that night to the new child. The crib was in his room again. After Gabe had slept soundly in Jonas's room for 4 nights, his parents had pronounced the experiment a success and Jonas a hero. Gabriel was growing rapidly now, crawling and giggling across the room and pulling himself up to stand. He could be upgraded to the nurturing center, and Father said happily now that he slept and could be officially named and given to his family in December, which was only 2 months away. But when he was taken away, he stopped sleeping again and cried at night. So he was back in Jonas's sleeping room. They would give it a little more time, they decided. Since Gabe seemed to like it in Jonas's room, he would sleep there at night a little longer until the habit of sound sleep was fully formed. The nurturers were very optimistic about Gabriel's future. There was no answer to Jonas's whisper. Gabriel was sound asleep. Things could change, Gabe, Jonas went on. Things could be different. I don't know how, but there must be some way for things to be different. There could be colors and grandparents, he added, staring through the dimness towards the ceiling of his sleeping room. And everybody would have memories. You know about memories, he whispered, turning towards the crib. Gabriel's breathing was even and deep. Jonas liked having him there, though he felt guilty about the secret. Each night he gave memories to Gabriel. Memories of boat rides and picnics in the sun. Memories of soft rainfall against window panes. Memories of dancing barefoot on a damp lawn. Gabe? The new child stirred slightly in his sleep, and Jonas looked over at him. There could be love, Jonas whispered. The next morning, for the first time, Jonas did not take his pill. Something within him, something that had grown there through the memories, told him to throw the pill away. I think I am going to do chapter 17, just because chapter 15 was so short and chapter 17 doesn't look that long. Yeah, it's not that long. So we'll do 17. Okay. Chapter 17. Today is declared an unscheduled holiday. Jonas and his parents and Lily turned in surprise and looked at the wall speaker from which the announcement had come. It happened so rarely and such a treat for the entire community when it did. Adults were exempted from the day's work, children from school and training and volunteer hours. The substitute laborers, who had been given a different holiday, took over all the necessary tasks, nurturing, food delivery, and care of the old. And the community was free. Jonas cheered and put his homework folder down. He had been about to leave for school. School was less important to him now than before. And before much more time had passed, his formal schooling would end. But still, for 12s, even though they had begun their adult training, there were endless lists of rules to be memorized and newest technology to be mastered. He wished his parents, sister, and Gabe a happy day and rode down the bicycle path looking for Asher. He had not taken the pills now for 4 weeks. The stirrings had returned. He felt a little guilty and embarrassed about the pleasurable dreams that came to him when he slept, but he knew he couldn't go back to the world of no feelings that he had lived in for so long. And his new heightened feelings permeated a greater realm than simply his sleep. Though he knew that his failure to take the pills accounted for some of it, he thought that maybe the feelings also came from the memories. Now he could see all of the colors, and he could keep them too, so that the trees and grass and bushes stayed green in his vision. Gabriel's rosy cheeks stayed pink even when he slept, and apples were always, always red. Now, through the memories, he had seen oceans and mountain lakes and streams that gurgled through the woods, and now he saw the familiar wide river beside the path differently. He saw all of the light and color and history it contained and carried in its slow-moving water, and he knew that there was an elsewhere from which it came, and an elsewhere to which it was going. On this unexpected, casual holiday, he felt happy, as he always had on holidays, but with a deeper happiness than ever before. Thinking as he always did about precision of language, Jonas recognized that this was a new depth of feeling that he was experiencing. Somehow, they were not at all the same as the feelings that every evening, in every dwelling, every citizen analyzed with endless talk. I felt angry because someone broke the play area rules, Lily had said once, making a fist with her small hand to indicate her fury. Her family, Jonas among them, had talked about the possible reasons for rule-breaking and the need for understanding and patience until Lily's fist had relaxed and the anger was gone. But Lily had not felt anger, Jonas realized now. Shallow impatience and exasperation, that was all Lily had felt. He knew that with certainty because now he knew what anger was. Now he had, in the memories, experienced injustice and cruelty, and he had reacted with rage that welled up so passionately inside him that the thought of discussing it calmly at the evening meal was unthinkable. I felt sad today, he had heard his mother say, and they comforted her. But now Jonas had experienced real sadness. He had felt grief. He knew that there was no quick comfort for emotions like those. They were deeper, and they did not need to be told. They were felt. Today he felt happiness. Asher? He spied his friend's bicycle leaning against the tree at the edge of the playing field. Nearby, other bikes were strewn on the ground. On the holiday, the usual rules of order could be disregarded. He skipped to a stop and then dropped his own bike beside the others. "Hey, Ash!" he shouted, looking out. There seemed to be no one in the play area. "Where are you?" "Shoo!" A child's voice came from behind a nearby bush. Made the sound. "Pow! Pow! Pow!" A female 11 named Tanya staggered from where she had been hiding. Dramatically, she clutched her stomach and stumbled in a zigzag pattern, groaning. "You got me," she called, and fell to the ground, grinning. "Blam!" Jonas, standing on the side of the playing field, recognized Asher's voice. He saw his friend, aiming an imaginary weapon in his hand, dart behind one tree to another. "Blam! You're in my line of ambush, Jonas! Watch out!" Jonas stepped back. He moved behind Asher's bike and knelt so that he was out of sight. It was a game they had often played with other children. A game of good guys and bad guys. A harmless pastime that used up their contained energy and ended only when they all lay posed in a freakish postures on the ground. He had never recognized it as a game of war before. "Attack!" A shout came from behind the small storehouse where the play equipment was kept. Three children dashed forward, their imaginary weapons firing position. From the opposite side of the field came an imposing shout, "Counterattack!" From their hiding places, a horde of children, Jonas recognized Fiona in the group, emerged, running in a crouched position, firing across the field. Several of them stopped, grabbed their own shoulders and chest in an exaggerated gesture, and pretended to be hit. They dropped to the ground and lay suppressing giggles. Feeling surged within Jonas. He found himself walking forward into the field. "You're hit, Jonas!" Asher yelled from behind a tree. "Pow! You're hit again!" Jonas stood alone in the center of the field. Several of the children raised their heads and looked at him uneasily. The attacking armies were slowed, emerging from their crouched position and watching to see what he was doing. In his mind, Jonas saw the face of the boy who had lain dying on the field and begged him for water. He had sudden choking feeling, as if it were difficult to breathe. One of the children raised an imaginary rifle and made an attempt to destroy him with a firing noise. Pshoo! Then they were all silent, standing awkwardly, and the only sound was the sound of Jonas's shuddering breath. He was struggling not to cry. Gradually, when nothing happened, nothing changed, the children looked at each other nervously and went away. He heard the sounds as they righted their bicycles and began to ride down the path that led from the field. Only Asher and Fiona remained. "What's wrong, Jonas? It was only a game," Fiona said. "You ruined it," Asher said in an irritated voice. "I don't play it anymore." "Oh," he said, "don't play it anymore," Jonas pleaded. "I'm the one who's training for assistant recreation director," Asher pointed out angrily. "Games aren't your area of expertness." "Expertise," Jonas corrected him automatically. "Whatever. You can't say what we play, even if you are going to be the new receiver." Asher looked warily at him. "I apologize for not paying you the respect you deserve," he mumbled. "Asher," Jonas said. He was trying to speak carefully and with kindness, to say exactly what he wanted to say. "You had no way of knowing this. I didn't know it myself until recently, but it's a cruel game. In the past there have..." "I said I apologize, Jonas." Jonas sighed. There was no use. Of course Asher didn't understand. "I accept your apology, Asher," he said wearily. "Do you want to go for a ride along the river, Jonas?" Fiona asked, biting her lip with nervousness. Jonas looked at her. She was so lovely. For a fleeting instant, he thought he would like nothing better than to ride peacefully along the river path, laughing and talking with his gentle female friend. But he knew that such times had been taken from him now. He shook his head. After a moment, his two friends turned and went to their bikes. He watched as they rode away. Jonas trudged to the bench beside the storehouse and sat down, overwhelmed with feelings of loss. His childhood, his friendships, his carefree sense of security. All of the things that seemed to be slipping away. With his new, heightened feelings, he was overwhelmed by sadness and the way that others had laughed and shouted, playing war. But he knew that they could not understand why without the memories. He felt such love for Asher and for Fiona, but they couldn't feel it back without the memories, and he couldn't give them those. Jonas knew with certainty that he could change nothing. Back in their dwelling that evening, Lily chattered merrily about the wonderful holiday that she'd had, playing with her friends, having her midday meal out of doors, and she confessed, sneaking in a very short try on her father's bicycle. "I can't wait until I get my own bicycle next month. Father's is too big for me. I fell," she explained matter-of-factly. "Good thing Gabe wasn't in the child seat." "A very good thing," Mother agreed, frowning at the idea of it. Gabriel waved his arms at the mention of himself. He had begun to walk just the week before. The first steps for a new child were always an occasion for celebration at the nurturing center, Father said, but also for introduction of a discipline wand. Now Father brought the slender instrument home with him each night in case Gabriel misbehaved. But he was a happy, easygoing toddler. Now he moved unsteadily across the room, laughing. "Gay," he chirped. Gay was the way he said his own name. Jonas brightened. It had been a depressing day for him, after such a bright start. He had set his glum thoughts aside. He thought about starting to teach Lily to ride so that she could speed off proudly after her ceremony of 9, which would be coming soon. It was hard to believe that it was almost December again, that almost a year had passed since he had become a 12. He smiled as he watched the new child plant one small foot on the floor carefully before the other, grinning with glee at his own steps as he tried them out. "I want to go to sleep early tonight," Father said. "Tomorrow's a busy day for me. The twins are being born tomorrow, and the test results show that they're identical." "One for here, one for elsewhere," Lily chanted. "One for here, one for else. Do you actually take it elsewhere, Father?" Jonas asked. "No, I just have to make the selection. I weigh them and hand the larger one over to the nurturer who's standing by, waiting. And then I get the small one all cleaned up and ready and comfy. Then I perform a small ceremony of release, and..." He glanced down, grinning at Gabriel. "Then I wave bye-bye," he said in a special sweet voice that he used when he spoke to the new child. He waved his hand in a familiar gesture. Gabriel giggled and waved bye-bye back at him. "And somebody else comes to get him? Someone from elsewhere?" "That's right, Jonas. Bonus?" Jonas rolled his eyes in embarrassment as his father had used a silly pet name. Lily was deep in thought. What if they give the little twin a name elsewhere? A name like, maybe Jonathan. And here in our community, at his naming, the twin that we keep is given the name Jonathan. Then there would be two children with exactly the same name. They would look exactly the same. And someday, maybe when there are 6, one group of 6s would go to visit another community on a bus. And there in the other community, in the other group of 6s, there would be a Jonathan who is exactly the same as the other Jonathan. And then maybe they would get mixed up and take the wrong Jonathan home. And maybe his parents wouldn't notice. And then... She paused for a breath. "Lily," Mother said, "I have a wonderful idea. Maybe when you become a 12, they'll give you the assignment of storyteller. I don't think we've had a storyteller in the community for a long time, but if I were on the committee, I would definitely choose you for that job." Lily grinned. "I have a better idea for one more story," she announced. "What if we were actually all twins and didn't know it, and so elsewhere there would be another Lily and another Jonas and another Father and another Asher and another Chief Elder and another..." Father groaned. "Lily," he said, "it's bedtime." That's it. That's 3 chapters, which was about the same length as 2 chapters. Because that first one was heavy. We're going to be starting with chapter 18 and 19. 20, 21, 22, and 23. That's perfect. So there'll be 3 more parts if the chapters aren't ridiculously short. But that's it. Angels, I hope you enjoyed. I look forward to seeing you in the next one, because I'll be reading more tomorrow, because I love this book. Take care of yourselves, be awesome to each other, and remember that all you can do is your best. More than that is asking for too much for yourself. Have a good one. Night.